everybody. Welcome to the Board Game Barbecue Podcast. I'm Sarah. This is episode 185. Tonight, I am joined by Jules and Mike. How are you doing, guys?
Good,
I'm doing
Sarah.
Excellent.
Yes, that's good. That's good to hear.
We're good.
Some positive vibes going on. I came from the Board Game Barbecue game day yesterday, feeling amazing from that. Didn't sleep. Basically very well the past couple of nights. So if I yawn, I apologize. I'm waiting for the crash.
You're just riding that wave of endorphins after the board game day.
I really am. And I think like we've had a lot of people mention in the community how much they enjoyed it. And like every time I read something like that, I'm then like super excited again.
Get
and
a little reminded, buzz again.
Yes. Yes. So yeah, it's been really cool. I think it was one of the best ones, if not the best Sydney game day that we've had. I mean, we've only had three. So I guess that's not that hard to do.
A big sample size.
That's right. It's not a big sample size, but it was really good. And like we had a bit of a drama. We had to change rooms and stop selling tickets and make it a bit smaller. But, you know, sometimes smaller events, like going to a small concert venue, sometimes a small tight-knit crowd is like, really cool, and that's what it was like. It was a very cool day. Everyone was really happy, friendly, having a good time. Nobody was walking around like, what do I do? Where do I go? It was so easy to, you know, to see if someone was without game and put them into one. And awesome. Yeah, it was just awesome. It was really good. It was really good. And that old adage of like, if you're going to teach well, you're probably not going to play well. That was my day.
You taught really well.
Yeah, I taught so well that my games crashed and burned, especially like in Golem. I got my worst ever score in Golem. So,
oh no.
It just means you're a really good teacher. That's what I always say. If you do badly, it means just it's you're just such a great teacher. Everyone just escalated to a higher level.
For sure. They ascended.
Yes.
You know? And it was definitely like that. Or I'm just bad at playing, which is also probably true. No, it was good. It was really fun. I think most people enjoyed the games. I think so one of the games I taught was Mind Management, which I'm going to talk to you guys about later. And that, I think, was the biggest hit of the day. People seem to love that. But anyway, I won't keep on rambling. I want to hear about what you guys have been playing lately as well.
Oh, well, one of the things I've been enjoying recently is we played, both Mike and I, as well as with a couple other community members, we were two sessions into a campaign of Kingdom Death Monster. And the first session went really smoothly. We defeated the White Lion in the prologue quite comfortably. We didn't have too many issues. But then going up against it this time in the first hunt, let's just say things got really messy. I ended up the game not dying, but I got disemboweled pretty badly. Had a lot of bleeding. Right. I could only move one space. It was just horrific. But I managed to land the killing blow on it, and we got out alive, which was it was pretty intense. But it was so much fun. I've been really enjoying playing it. So thematic, as Adrian said on a recent podcast. It's really, really enjoyable. And I can't wait to see what the different bosses bring to the game and how it changes it up each time.
See, I don't know whether I'm as excited about the boss battles as I am about that whole like survival element to it. Like that whole thing about where you're trying to craft things and go from being like this loin-clothed, you know, loser essentially to some like badass. It kind of reminds me of like Dark Souls in a way, because you start off with kind of like
nothing
equipment that's pretty lame, and then and then you've got to sort of build that up, and you've got to get better like armor and things like that. So it sort of sounds like it's a little bit.
It definitely has that. So after the second session, we've crafted a few items now. So I think me and Mike have some like bone axes. And I've managed to make this helmet, and I got a cool piece of loot from the last encounter where I was able to make this lion sort of tribal headdress sort of thing over my helmet. So I've got some cool looking gear now. But yeah, I can't.
So you got like the trophy, wearing the trophy from like your till around. How does the crafting actually work? Like how does
it's pretty basic. So you have a couple of types of resources. So you get organs, you get bones, you get more and more stuff as the game progresses, but there's a few sort of basic types of resources. I think there's scrap is another one. And as you build your civilization, there's different. So we've got like a skinnery where you can make sort of leather armor, and it might say to make a leather vest, you need one of this and one of this, and you just cash in those cards and then you've got that item. So it's not super complicated, but there's so much you can diverge down different paths of what you want to build and unlock and things like that.
And can you, like, every time you play, can you build a leather vest for that and you know what that is going to cost you? Or is it like you have to unlock the ability to craft something first?
You sort of unlock a card, a big card, and it has all the items that you can craft from this location.
Unlocking a location basically to craft
certain items.
So it's like your settlement level is one, and you can craft all the things if you have the resources to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, that sounds pretty cool. Yeah.
You just pillage the monster afterwards and you take body parts and build things out of it. And let's just say our white lion isn't going to make any more little white lions. Let's just say that much.
I heard about that.
Yeah. So you craft something from that?
I was determined to make a necklace, but there's no necklaces available in the game. So I was very disappointed. That is a shame. And instead, just one step up is, what are we making, Jules?
Yeah,
we're making a drink.
Yeah, we made some a sort of frenzy potion.
Frenzy juice. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which makes sense, obviously. Not as good as a necklace, but you know.
And I was
that is
I,
so
actually
funny.
I don't know. It wasn't my character because I'm playing a male character, but I was the father of a baby in the game, and we had a child.
Okay. Congratulations.
Yes. Jules and Scotty had a baby together.
Oh, okay.
The co-parenting.
We named, I think we, did we have a girl? I can't remember now.
You can't remember what sex your baby was?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was a girl. We named him Hope. That was the name.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Hope.
I remember the name.
That's a lovely name.
So it's really interesting because I think I rolled a lantern, which is a 10 on the D10, which is like a best outcome for it. And they were born into the world with like these inherent abilities. So like even there's so much character development in the game. It's really exciting. I can't wait to see how it all unfolds. But my character got pretty badly wounded. And as I said, he literally was disemboweled. So he has to rest out the next fight. So I might take Hope into the next encounter.
I'm sorry. This is just way too funny. It's like you're like walking. Sorry, not even walking at this point. You're barely moving.
And I had a baby.
And a baby.
Your guts are hanging out. You still somehow had a baby, and now you're just gonna take a couple of days off.
Send the baby into that.
Each phase you go through in the game represents. It's supposed to be a whole. They call it a lantern year. I don't know if it's 1 year or multiple years. Right. So time does pass.
Yeah. You know, if it's multiple, because let me tell you, 1 year olds are not going to do a thing in battle.
That's true.
Yeah. Although they might be able to do that thing. You know how, you know, you can like psych someone out by just screaming at them to avoid a fight? Yeah. 1 year old might be able to do that potentially.
Yeah.
This game sounds so awesome. It really does sound like it's up my alley, and I just can't go there. I feel like it's going to just be a very long, arduous process to even find the game, let alone start playing it.
But I will say, you can see it's a long game though. Like you can see that, like, I can see amazing promise in it. I can't say I'm loving it yet, but I can tell I'm going to love it because we played two sessions a few weeks apart, and I feel it's one of those games I really want to spend like a day on just to get a bunch of stuff done, you know, like it's a slow burn, but every game that you play, you can see all this promise is going to happen from it, and your town gets a bit bigger, and you get a bit stronger. And you're like, oh, this looks cool. In, you know, 4 or 5 games' time, this is going to be start getting really epic because I'm going to be so much tougher. We're going to have such a bigger town. We're going to have so many more people. You can see the promise of it just growing to a really awesome point that's going to be really cool.
But
really
on the flip side of that, I believe, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but also can't you just completely lose everything and have to start from the start?
So if you run out of survivors, if you run out of people in your town, you lose. So because what? Yeah.
Hence the reason why you want to have a
lot
of babies.
Exactly, yeah. But apparently when you roll to have babies, you can actually die in the process. So there is a risk in doing that.
Yep.
So, yeah. It's a
Didn't it happen to us, Jules? Didn't someone start the game and they died before they started?
That's right. Yeah, really? So what happened is before we fought the white lion, when you go through the hunt phase, you have like a little track, and there's some event cards that are put out before you reach the monster on that track, and then you go into the battle. And one of the events Gene pulled was there was some sort of statue that we could all see, and he rolled a 1, which meant he got attracted to the statue and went and touched it. And basically he became one with the statue and died immediately. But then the person that was in the statue came out of it and they became a new character in our party. It was really funny. So before we even had the fight, he died.
Yeah,
that is so funny. And it's like, oh, I've just set up my character. Oh, and now I'm dead. Oh, and now I'm this random statue character.
Like, it was hilarious.
That's so funny.
Yeah. I can't wait to play more of it.
I mean, funny for everybody else.
Yeah, it was. So funny.
Yeah, it sounds really cool. It sounds really fun. Anyway, let's stop talking about that because I think it's been talked about already too much lately. What about you, Mike? What have you been playing?
I've been playing a bunch of stuff. I had one of those things that I think a lot of our Ask Gamers look forward to, where I got invited to a friend's house for dinner and none of them are board gamers. And they said, my good friend, she said, oh, you're not going to convince my husband to play board games and actually enjoy it. Like, he'll do it, but you won't find one he'll like. And I'm like, challenge accepted. And he's real stubborn and hard to read, but like, I started off with Skull and he seemed to be getting into it. And by the end, he said he'd rather be playing Uno. Okay. I'm like, okay, fair enough. Let's go to the next one. The thing that got him, I'm like, all right, I feel like he's a guy that wants to show some skill. I'm like, let's play a dexterity game. So I had Men at Work ready to go. And before you knew it, he's walking around the table and getting like eye level with the pieces and trying to scope out what's going on. I'm like, tell me you don't like this. He's like, I'm not saying nothing. And we just had a high five. Like, yeah, we got him. We got him. He's like, it's not a board game though. And I said straight away, I'm like, but this is the point. What's a board game now? I said, this is a game where we're playing for points. We're competing. It's a dexterity game. I'm like, this is what I try to explain to people, that board games are like movie genres now. Just because you don't like a drama doesn't mean you won't like a comedy. You know, it's that genre now, and that's what I want to show people. Mm. There's different genres, and you can just have such a different experience. It doesn't have to be roll dice and move the piece. A dexterity game is as much as a board game as anything else. It's just a different experience. And I was really happy to break through with that one. That was a big win. And Men at Work is just always so funny and so tense. And I think one of the things that I like more and more about it is that
I haven't, but I've seen it out on table several times.
Yeah.
I have not.
Well, when somebody stuffs up and they drop a piece, it becomes the next person's responsibility to clean up the mess. And if there's any pieces underneath the whole building, they have to get them out safely before they can take their turn. So it's really funny when someone messes up and they drop a bunch of stuff, then the next person drops something trying to clean it up, then it's the next person's turn. And it just sort of snowballs. We actually had a moment a couple of weeks ago where I taught some friends, and if all the workers end up on the structure, it actually means that the game's pretty much over and you win by a point system. And I pointed us out and I said, mate, I said, as soon as you put your guy down successfully on this building, Tom's going to win because he has the most points right now. Once there's no more workers to put out, the game's over. And he looked at me and he looked at Tom and he threw the piece into the middle. So it sent everything crumbling down so the game couldn't end yet. It was hilarious. But you know what? It was a tactic you could take, and I respect that.
That's hilarious.
The table talk. So much time.
It was so good. It was that so sounds- good. So yeah, MetaWorks been going really well lately.
Yeah, it sounds pretty fun. I haven't played that one. I like a bit of a dexterity game every now and then. I love that he was walking around the table and like, you know, like it was a snooker or something, like looking at.
He caused an accident because he decided, I'm going to start practicing on the own over this end. And he started building like a mini structure to practice. Yep. And at the end of somebody's turn, his little structure fell over, which sent enough vibrations through the table to actually drop pieces from the main thing we were building. So I took a point off him. I'm like, well, you stuffed up. That's your fault. So I'm taking something off you now. It was pretty
fun. Yeah, I might be too clumsy for that game, actually. I might just.
That's what makes it more fun.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
the game's hard in general. Like, it asks you to do really, really difficult things. Some moves, some turns are really easy, but some turns, just the combination of things it asks you to do are almost impossible. And that's what makes it fun because you know someone's going to drop things. It's very rare you're going to have that perfect game that isn't the last person standing. So it's just fun watching people stuff up. But when you epically fail, it becomes the next person's problem, which is even more
fun. I do like that. I do like that it's not like, oh, you had a hard thing to do and you failed it and now I'm going to do my easy thing. It's like, well, no, you're actually going to try and now do the hard thing that I couldn't do. I think that's really cool. So when you say like objectives are hard or easy, what are we talking about here? Are we like, do you draw a card and it's like you have to do the setup? Yeah. You have to make
so the back of the cards and the front of the cards are so they work in unison. Uh-huh. So the back of one card will tell you two bits of information if you're doing a girder action or a worker action.
Girder action, and what I love color. This.
And what color you want to do. So for example, if it's a worker action, you're going to put a worker on a purple or a white girder. Or if it's a girder action, you're going to place a black or a red one, you know?
Yeah.
And then the other side shows you if you're doing a girder action, you have to do the strongest worker action, which means you have to lean it on a worker's arm, which is really, really tough. Or you have to transport a brick, meaning you have to put a brick on it first, then move it over to the main building and put it on there. Like, it gives you a different challenge every time. So it's a combination of the back of the next card and the front of the card just flipped, which is, it's fun.
Cool. It sounds fun.
Yeah. What have you been playing, Sarah? What's been happening?
Well, let me tell you about more about the game day. And okay, so I'm going to spoil my my oath now, but I do that every time. So what else? So I played Golem, which I've already spoken about. I played Illusion, which I've already spoken about. The other game I played was Mind Management. I played this a couple of times, so I'm going to talk about that. This is actually kind of my sizzle because it's super awesome. I'm really, really impressed with this game. There's actually a lot of hype about this game.
Yeah, there is a lot.
And I don't want to join that bandwagon just yet, but I will say that I did have one particular game of this where we were cooperating in, you know, when you get in that space where the conversation is just electric, you know, like you're really just working wavelength together, like, oh no. Yes, and or someone's like making these amazing suggestions and you're like, oh yes, I think you're right. Yes, we need to do this. And then everyone just coming together sort of makes things work. We were so close to catching the recruiter. Mm-hmm. We were so close, like the entire game, right? And it was just so exciting. So he was sitting there thinking he's going to get busted the whole time and we were thinking we were going to catch him the whole time. So it was just like intense, stressful. So much fun. So much fun. I think that at the end of the day, I think why we failed was because maybe we were just talking a little bit too much. We might have given him ideas. Like, if they're thinking I'm going this way, maybe I'll go that way. So I think maybe we were just a little bit too vocal. But what it is obviously it's a hidden role game. So there's one person who's trying to stay hidden and they have to recruit 12 people to their evil organization, basically, and we have to stop them. We have to find them before they do that. And the board has like a grid, and there's all these different features on the board. And at the start of the game, behind their screen, they will have three cards that have features on them, and that's the places they can recruit. So they're going to be wandering around the board trying to recruit, and we have to figure out, we have to ask about features. Oh, have you been on a parrot? Have you been on a spy parrot, like, mm-hmm. before? In any of your movements, in any of your movements.
So you're asking the person directly.
Yes, you ask them directly. Okay. And if they've been to any of the spy parrots or whatever they are, then they have to put a foot on one of the ones they've been to. Only one, though.
So they're multiple. It's not all of them.
Yes, exactly. And so you don't know if that was the last one they went to or the first one they went to or whatever. But you can go to that space later and you can reveal. So if you do get a foot token, if you're lucky enough to get a foot token, you can go there and you can reveal what that is, and you can hope that it's close to the time that you're at currently. Like, because if it's the first place they went, well, geez, and we're at turn eight, they could be basically anywhere. So you start revealing a little bit of a path. Oh, they could have gone here, they could have gone there, and a bit like Letters from Whitechapel, there they do have a special move.
They can
do one special move, potentially two. There's one actually that sits on the board that the good guys put on the board, and they can later use that. And if they use it later, then you know that they've been in that space because they picked it up. But you don't know when they picked it up.
Okay. Yeah. That's cool.
And also there's...
So you can sort of bait him into a certain area.
Yeah, you can try. Cool. It is quite challenging. It's challenging for both, and it comes with this really fancy case that has all these different packages in it, and you can make it either easier for the good guys or easier for the recruiter. And, you know, like because if you're playing with the same group all the time and one person is winning all the time, you might want to make it easier for the other team. So I think that's really cool. You can add different things to it. We had an ally. We had a Black Ops dolphin. And our Black Ops dolphin was not.
Does he have a uniform?
He.
Like a little SWAT team uniform and a dolphin?
No, he had a laser. We had sharp lasers at dad.
Laser.
yeah, he wasn't super helpful. Actually, he was doing his job okay. I think it was more else. But also there's like bad guys on the board that are potentially blocking things. So the recruiter has these like evil immortals, four figures on the board that they can block us from asking about things. So we can't ask about the C4 canine assassination dogs if they're on one of those spaces with one of these dogs. Yeah. So we have to like – we can go on a space with an immortal and try and shake them down to get information from them, and then we're allowed to push them. So we're allowed to push them away and fight them and things like that. When we shake them down, we can guess what one of the features behind their screen is. So we can say, we think you're recruiting on the fountain, the dream bus or something. There's a dream bus. Because all of this, by the way, mind management, obviously, like the evil organization is like messing with people's minds and stuff like that. So it has all these crazy stuff in it. I'm starting to read the graphic novels now, and they're really cool. There's a lot of.
So it's based off an existing novel series. Yes,
it's based off that. Okay. So that's what all these weird things are. Yeah, it's really.
I want to start asking about the story because I'm like, I understood about the whole evil network and like spies and things. I'm like, okay, now you're throwing dolphins into the mix. I'm like,
what?
How does a dolphin get in there?
Yeah, because one of the supers actually can talk to animals, and she trained the dolphins to be Black Ops dolphins. So yeah, so if you're reading the novel, it makes more sense. But I can't say that it's super. It doesn't give you these things. You have to know what's going on in the graphic novels to know what it's. Otherwise, it just seems like a random thing. It's like, what, Black Ops dolphin? Why do I have that?
So it'll be very advantageous to actually know the novel and then go.
Yeah,
into
it
the
will
game.
Feel more thematic if you know it. Yeah, so what was I going to say? Yeah, so if you shake down the immortals and you say, I think you've got like the dream bus is one of your features that you're recruiting at, then they actually have to remove that and they can't recruit there anymore. And so we were hoping that we would be able to stop him from recruiting. And we actually managed to guess what all the three features were. And because of that, because we knew what features he had behind there, we knew where, like at what times he'd recruited, we started to see the path. We thought we knew where he was, and he just recruited he just got to the time limit. So he can either recruit all 12 or pass the final time limit, and then we don't have any more time. And it's pretty quick. The game's actually really quick because it doesn't give you that many turns. Which I think is brilliant, because there was so much discussion that at some points I was like, we need to do something, because otherwise the poor recruiter is just sitting there like, what are you guys deciding? Like, make a choice. We were so into it. We were just, you know, trying to figure out where he'd been and what we should ask about and what was his feature behind the thing. Like, was he recruiting at the Parrot? I think he's recruiting at the Parrot, you know. And so I think that it's really good that they make it like – fast and fun, and you can just play it again. Oh, I think it's really good. Like, I don't want to jump on this. Like,
fast, how fast?
Hype. What? How fast?
Like, how fast is the game? So it doesn't take super long.
Yeah.
Like, it's like a half an hour game or like an hour game?
No, I think it was like, it was an hour and a half with a teach.
Okay.
With a teach.
Yeah.
That's good. That's really good.
Yeah, I thought it was good too, because the teach, to be honest, the teach is a little bit long for what the game is. And I think it's one of those ones, you know how Decrypto, you're trying to explain it, but people are like, I don't get that.
Mm.
It seems weird. Yeah. But then you play around and people are like, oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's like that. It's like that. It sounds really strange, but it's really simple. And even the board has the actions that the goodies can do and what the recruiter can do. And they have cards in front of them. So you can literally pick up at any time the card and go, oh, right, these are the actions. Like, I can do this or this and this. Like, you can almost go, this is the game. If you want to look, just pick up the card. You know, it explains itself, kind of thing. So, yeah, it's a really good game. I cannot wait to play it more. I can't wait to win it. I would like to win one time. No, I want to try being the recruiter just to change it up. You know?
Well, there's definitely been a lot of hype around the game and people saying it's the best like hidden movement game they've played. And I know you like Letters from Whitechapel. So at this point, what would you say is the better of those two?
Oh, man, it's so tough because I love Letters from Whitechapel, but... And I've had some amazing games of that as well. But from the discussion in the last game that we played of My Management, I've got to say that was up there.
Yeah,
that was really up there because it was so puzzling. It's almost like Letters from Whitechapel meets Planet X in a way because of the logic puzzle of it. Yeah.
And really hopefully good. The game...
I seriously recommend
hopefully the game will evolve more as you unlock those other modules that you can chuck in.
Yeah, adding new stuff. Adding, I think the recruiter might get different slip abilities where they can slip away you. I think that we'll get different allies, not just the Black Ops Dolphin. Yeah. I really want to show you guys.
I nearly backed it the second time, but I'm like, I want to try it first. I'm really, I like the sound of it a lot.
That's fair.
I'm very curious. I want to play with a Black Ops Dolphin.
And now that this exists, I would say, like, if someone asked me, should I get Letters or should I get Mind Management, I would recommend Mind Management. Do you know what I mean? Like, I would recommend that one.
Do you know how it plays at a low play count? Because I think I've played Letters of Whitechapel once. And even though I enjoyed it, it was a two-player game.
Yeah.
And I've had a few other people say that when you're on the hunting side, the one player isn't as fun because you've got no one to bounce off and it was a lot harder.
100%.
Do you think Mind Management would be a better lower count game or probably equally as difficult?
I think equally as difficult, to be honest, because, I think that discussion thing is just so good when you have more. And even we played a three-player game where we had two it was me and Eliza from Goat Widen Games, actually. Eliza played with me against Marcus and we were discussing things, but it's just not the same. When you have four brains, it's better than two, right? So,
absolutely.
Yeah. But Mind Management does have a solo and an app and a co-op mode. So,
that's right.
Yeah. So, you could play co-op with two people against the app-driven recruiter.
Cool.
And I think that would be cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that would definitely make it a better option. Nice. If there's two people.
Awesome. Mm.
Yeah. And also it's very so cool. pretty.
It does look very nice. Pretty.
I mean, that art is not to everyone's taste, but I really like it. I think it's really funky. Yeah.
Really cool.
Yeah. That's my sizzling.
Nice. That's good. That's sizzling. Yeah. I played, I got to play Dead Reckoning the other day as well, which was really cool.
Yeah.
That was pretty epic, and in the typical 4X, everyone's sort of playing a bit of a different game. I just wanted to be a pirate and go and attack everyone. But it used that card crafting system that started with Mystic Veil, so that's why I was really hanging to play it. It's a John DeClair game, and, man, it was good. Connor said he'd think I'd like it, and it was awesome. It went very long. I think the teach was about an hour. But same thing, like, the game wasn't that hard to play at all. There's just so many routes you can do and so many things you have to understand. You just need to sort of explain it all before you get started. But then once we got started, we just took off and it was really cool.
Is it sandboxy? Like, can you kind of do whatever you want? Like, can you go, I'm going to be more of an explorer-y person? Or is
it? Yeah, like one of the guys didn't really battle anyone. He just stayed on one side of the map and sort of went up and down and gathered his resources and did his own thing. Mm. And I just wanted to attack people. So I was going around starting fights and being a bit of a mean guy, just trying to mess with everyone. But that was fun for me, you know, like having some fights and, you know, dropping your tokens and that, you know, big ship token throwing dice, like it's like a dice tower almost, but it just determines what you get to do when you're in a battle. That was really
it's
cool.
It's like dice stairs really or something, isn't it? Dice steps.
Yeah,
or something else.
It's hard to explain. It's not even dice. You're dropping cubes into this little area that's got like different like separated spots on it, and wherever your cubes land, that's what action you're taking. So did I actually hit the ship? I don't know. I'll drop my cubes in there and I might hit the ship or I might not. It reminds me sort of like throwing dice in Dwellings of Eldervale, where someone can have six dice and one person might have one die, but if the guy that has one lands it in the right way, he can still win. And that's how I felt that was. Mm-hmm. It was a similar sort of feel. But Dead Reckoning, I highly recommend it, and I'm definitely looking forward to playing it again. That was really cool.
So you felt like a pirate?
Arr.
Have you played Merchants and Marauders?
I haven't played that either.
That's like a...
I've not.
That's a really cool pirate game. Like, I felt very much like a pirate in that game. Because it's like, it's sandboxy and there's all the different ports around the Caribbean and you're like going into port and you might go... I think you get three actions or something. It's been a while since I played it. I think you get three actions so you can like, oh, I'll pick up some goods and I might sell those later at a different port that wants them. And then I might just pop to the tavern and hear a tale and then you can like get quests.
Cool.
You can fight other players. You can fight the big, you know, powers in that area. So you can like fight a Dutch ship or the English ship or whatever. And then you really tick them off when you do that. And you might have a bounty. So you might have like on your board that you have a bounty on your head with the English. And then whenever you're like cruising around, they might travel towards you. I think that – I don't know if you guys have played Outer Rim, the Star Wars game.
No,
but I think
I haven't.
It's pretty much based on that. But I think that Merchants and Marauders is better. And it definitely feels – very piratey. Like you can upgrade your ship. You can get a bigger ship. So you start off with a little sloop or whatever, and then you can get a galleon. It's really cool. If you like pirates, you guys should check that out. Actually, wait a minute. Jules doesn't like pirates.
Yeah,
though.
It just doesn't interest me. Like? I don't dislike it. I'm just like,
You meh pirates.
Yeah, that's right.
I think this is the first pirate game I've played, I think. I don't think I've played another pirate game before.
I don't even own a pirate game.
I've got Tiny Epic Pirates that have been meaning to try, but that's my other pirate game
I haven't played that one.
Dead Reckoning was really awesome. My main game I think I've been enjoying lately is I played a second round of In the Hall of the Mountain King, which was awesome. I've been absolutely loving that game. I won't go into it too much because Jules has spoken about it before, but I just want to point the resource management in the Hall of the Mountain King is so unique and interesting. It's just, I haven't played anything like it before. It's such a cool mechanic where you're building like a little pyramid of trolls, and every time you add a new card, you get that trickle down effect, that cascading effect of all these new resources, and you want to spend them all before you add another one. Otherwise, you know, you're blocking areas from receiving more resources. And it's just been, it's the second time I played it still impressed me even more than the first time I played it, even trying to have a bit more of a strategy about it. It was just such a good game. In the Hall of the Mountain King has been absolutely smashing it lately.
That's really cool.
And I'm dying to bring it out a bunch more. It's got such a weird sort of feel to it that I can't compare it to another really game. I never thought pick up and deliver would be my thing, but it's got that pick up and deliver mechanic with your little statues that you're trying to move around, and it just really impressed me. It's I'm glad that I got the deluxe copy, because the pieces, the components in the deluxe copy are absolutely amazing. The
coins are nice, aren't they?
But it's, the coins are so cool. Everything's cool on that one.
You guys are so tactile. Like, I want to feel the thing.
I am. I have trouble explaining to people that don't board game why I want to pay more money for a deluxe copy of a game. I'm like, you don't understand how cool nice pieces just feel. Like, it's a whole different experience when you hear the clank or you feel the weight. It's, I don't know how to explain to somebody that a coin is cooler because it's heavy. Like, I don't know how to translate that to people. But have you tried this one yet, Sarah?
I have. I tried it with Jules. Remember, I talked about it last time, and I outed Jules as like not teaching it 100%. And I felt really bad.
I missed one.
I felt really bad.
The one thing I missed was putting the random plinths on the second row of trolls in the market. That one bit I missed. And that really just messed up the whole game. It just made, I was like,
I just remember you being upset with yourself. I wasn't bothered because I didn't even know.
I was so annoyed.
But you were like, oh, I've stuffed it up.
Because all of the rest of the teach was fine. I just missed that one component that needed to be put out. And it just made the game broken. I was like, what?
It was so tight. I was like, no, but it made it interesting for me. I was like, wow, you can't do anything in this game. I love games like that. I was like, wow, this is really tough.
If you want Sarah to like your game, just take out a piece of it.
Make it harder. Remove an entire piece and just have her going, why can't I do all the things I want? And I'll be happy. I like a challenge.
No, it's a great game. It's so unique. It is really unique. There is nothing else like it. And it makes me all the more excited for the next game coming, Fall of the Mountain King, which is area control with a twist, because you're all sort of working. It's competitive, but you're all working against the gnomes that are trying to invade the mountain. I think Burnt Island Games do some amazing stuff. So very keen for that coming sometime this year.
I'm really interested in finding a game where there's like the semi co-op element done really well. I mean, I think that I think that the cost does it well because you can all, like, you have to kind of keep things afloat, or you can't sell stuff. You've got to be careful anyway. Because you could have countries that just go completely bust.
Yeah, the game I'm really interested in that has, it's, it does have semi-co-op as a not really as a type of game, but it's just sort of baked in, is going to be John Company.
Oh, that looks awesome. I wanted to back that.
Yeah,
one.
I went all in on that and got the metal coins and everything. But yeah, that's going to be really interesting, because you're all vying for power and position within the company. But you, when you get lots of status, you're in a place of interest to keep the company afloat and not tank it. So everyone's trying to get what they want, but not tank the company. It's going to be so interesting.
So take as much as you can, but without
destroying the whole kingdom. Yeah.
Tanking.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That it's going to be good.
Yes. I think I have regrets. I'm not.
Oh, dear.
Anyway, Jules, tell us about your sizzle. Oh,
my sizzle. I might be calling things really early here, but this is like game of the year material for me. That is Veiled Fate.
Hold the phone.
Yeah, Veiled Fate by Ivy Games. I've been so excited for this to come, and it finally arrived, and I've got to play a 5-player game, and it was just amazing. It's It's every bit as good as I remembered when I tried it on TTS when the Kickstarter campaign was running. It is a fantastic game. This is the second title that Ivy have put out. And they've...
What was their first Moonrakers. Game, sorry?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
So
yes.
They're fitting this niche where the games have a lot of... Veiled Fate, I find, has a lot of strategy, and Moonrakers has a lot of negotiation. And it's... But they're simple games. They're not hard to teach, but they're so rewarding. And they're very, very different games to a lot of other publishers out there. I mean, they're also a design studio, so games is not like their whole thing. So it's really interesting to see what they come up with. They feel like they're sort of like this group that are involved in the industry but somewhat adjacent, so their stuff just sticks out a bit more, if you know what I mean. And Veiled Fate just is one of those games that just feels really different, and they describe it as a strategic deduction game. So how the game works, it's really basic. There's 9 demigods, and each player gets given a card that represents one of those demigods who you want to have the most points at the end of the game. And everyone's allegiance is hidden, and all you do on your turn is you get 2 actions, one of which the option is just to pass one of the actions, and the other one is just to move a demigod. And where you move them can trigger lots of different things. So basically, on the board, you have some locations with quests. And the crux of the game is you'll get points through these quests being completed, and you'll move a demigod onto a location on that quest card, and you'll put down a vote card onto how it goes. Similar in a way to Avalon, where you go on a quest and everyone chucks in like a pass or fail card. In Veiled Fate, it's not really a pass or fail. It's just there's feathers and scorpions. Those are just the 2 symbols. Neither is good nor bad. It's just you're choosing how that quest plays out. And the rewards are split down the middle of the card. So it shows you if it's resolved for feathers, this will happen to all... This is the reward for all the demigods on the card. But if it goes scorpions, these are the rewards for all the demigods on the card. So when you choose a location, it might show on the scorpion side, gain a victory point. But if the outcome is feathers, you might lose a victory point. So as you put these characters out and put a vote card in, when they get completed, meaning all the slots are filled, some of the quests also have whoever put the last character in has to choose another player in the game to add a card to that quest, and you shuffle it up and reveal and see what happens. And so throughout the game, you're trying to figure out who is allied to who, because you can move any character you want. So you're trying to make moves that disadvantage people and put yourself in a good position without being too obvious. Because if you get sort of sprung and people are like, oh, you're definitely blue, then they can just start moving that character into really bad positions for you. But you never really know until the end of the game. And it just, for me, it holds that tension so well throughout the whole game. And I have not had a game where you've been able to nail who you think everyone is. There's always some sort of mystery. You might figure out one or two, but there's absolutely some mystery there. And it just makes the game so, so fun. It doesn't take long to play. The teach is maybe 10, 15 minutes at most. Takes about an hour and a half at tops, I would say, to play. But it has so many ways you can play it. One of the... Because it's a 2-8 player game. And when you start to go to 6 or more players, it actually becomes teams, but you don't know who's on your team. And there's lots of variety.
So you also have to deduce.
Yeah, you have to try and deduce who's going for what. And you might go super obvious and just go, come on, I'm trying to be obvious who I am. Come on, teammate, pick it up. And sort of like,
yeah, so you can support me.
That's right.
Help me out here.
Yeah, it's going hard early just puts a massive target on your back, because There's multiple ways the game can end. If someone's demigod gets to 12 points, they just win the game. Or if you go through the full three ages, it's whoever has the most victory points wins. And if it's tied, it matters which position you are in. So, like, there's a queue order for the markers of the demigods. If they're all on 4 points, they're actually lined up. So there is someone who's higher on 4 points, if that makes sense. So there's never a tie. There's always going to be an outright winner. So the timing of resolution becomes really important, because when you gain a point, you automatically jump to the front of that line within that point section. So when quests are resolved, it's always top to bottom. So if you gain a point and it's the last position, you'll have the last say, and the timing becomes important. It's so clever. There's event cards that mix up the game at the end of each age, where you all cast a vote and you can throw as many cards as you want in. Passing becomes important, because if you pass out of the round completely, you get first player token, and you get to decide, you have last say on sort of the age cards. It's such a simple game.
Wait, age cards and what are the event cards? Because I don't just like random events in games.
Happens is, at the start of an age, there'll be an age card in the middle, and you can see it. Everyone will know what we're voting on at the end of the age. You can see it right there. So you're trying to set yourself up for it. So it might have things like any demigods that are in the city, which is the central location of the board, get 2 victory points if it's voted for feathers. But if it's scorpions, it's everyone outside of the city gets 2 victory points. And if there's a tie, something else happens. So you're trying to set yourself up not only for getting points on these quests, but your position of the god at the end of the age. And it's not always to do with victory points. There's other things as well. So the cards are also a really important resource, because they're hard to get. And those are your votes. And you're trying to save some of those for the last, for the vote at the end of the age, because you can chuck as many cards in as you want, whereas a quest, you're going to need to put 1 at a time. It's just a brilliant game. I am very, very excited to get this to the table more. I am going to be running a teach of this at the Melbourne Game Day that's coming up. So when those go live, I will run a 5-player game of that, and I'm very excited to get that to the table again.
It sounds really interesting. I think that I would like to try it. It sounds a little bit more complicated than a lot of hidden role games.
Yeah, I'd probably say it's a little bit more involved. It sounds cool. It's really your turn is, you can do, you just move a character, and depending where you move them, something happens. Get a card, swap out a card, or you might finish a quest and then you just resolve it. And that's pretty much the crux of the game. It's just trying to figure out who's doing what, and the fact that everyone has the ability to move any character, and you always play with all 9 of the gods, no matter how many players there are. So, yeah.
That was going to be a question I was going to ask, actually, because I was going to say, if the game goes to teams and you get above 6, I'm like, how do you play a deduction game at 2? I'm like, because it doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but you're playing
you always
all the characters.
All the characters. So each player count has a very different feel. Which I'm excited to explore that full range in the game.
2-player would be really interesting. 2-player deduction.
Yeah, I think there's some slight tweaks at 2-player, but from 3 to 5, you just play with all of them, and then 6 and above, you start going into teams, which I'm excited to try that too.
Yeah. All right. Well, it looks like we've been playing a fair bit of interesting games there. I want to check out a few of those. So you mentioned the Melbourne Game Day. I think this is a good segue to talk about what game days we've got coming up, because we just had the Sydney Game Day on Saturday, and the next one is already on sale, and it will be on June 18th. I want to just do a special thank you again to Goat Wine Games for their pop-up shop, and they supported the last Sydney Game Day. It was amazing. They were so great. And that is Goat Wine, Goat Bear Wine Glug Glug Games, you know what games are, .com.
Wait, I want to hear the games noise.
Some
games,
dice rolling.
Box fart. I don't know.
Insane. Please.
I don't have a board game with me. I couldn't make a board game noise. check out their website. And thank you very much, Eliza, for helping us with the game day. We've got Melbourne Game Day coming up May 14th.
Oh, it's so close.
Mm-hmm. It's very close. It's like
a month away.
Just over a month away. Mm-hmm. Then we've got Brisbane Game Day on May 21st. Apologies for our overseas listeners that are just probably like, this is not fair for us right now.
What a better reason to come to a tour around Australia. Oh, you can follow the board game barbecue around Australia on a tour.
We've got to have something, right? They get all these conventions in America and in Europe. We've got to have some fun.
You're right. You're 100% right. I don't feel sorry for them at all. Okay, so all right, so let's move on to our board game bracket. Hey everyone, it's Sarah here. I want to talk a little bit about one of our sponsors who has sponsored the podcast from the very beginning, and that is Advent Games. AdventGames.com.au is an Australian board game store. This is the store where I get all of my games from. So you know that I'm not just advertising it just because. This is very personal to me. And Dean, who runs it, is very knowledgeable about games. He is a huge board gamer himself, and he often gives advice and things like that, and just awesome all-round customer service. So all around New South Wales, you can get flat rate shipping from adventgames.com.au for $10. If you're somewhere else in Australia, you can get flat rate shipping for $15, not that much more. And if you are super local, you can even see Dean at Chatswood on Tuesday nights to pick up games from him, from his very paws. So that is adventgames.com.au. Thank you so much for sponsoring the podcast. So the board game bracket, which is sponsored by Game Toppers, is we're going to resolve one first of all, and we're resolving Clans of Caledonia versus Too Many Bones. What an
interesting matchup.
It was, and both pretty cool games. Like, I have enjoyed both of these.
I've never played Clans, and I've only played half a game of Too Many Bones. But yeah, yeah. I've got the new Unbreakable version coming because I liked it enough to just try that version. Yeah. I think I'll really like it solo. But Clans is, I know it's a well-loved game. And based on the results I can see, or I followed...
Stop no, looking!
No, I haven't looked, look. But I was following it because I was really curious because Clans is like super bland looking, but I know it's highly rated in BGGs, and I'm very curious to see how it did. But maybe it's a game I really need to try. I'm sure Def would say absolutely.
Do you remember last time we had a bracket battle that in the first bracket, Clans was in there? And I like Euro games. I'd never even heard of Clans of Caledonia. I don't know where I had been.
What rock were you under?
I don't know why I hadn't heard of it. I know. So bizarre that I hadn't heard of it. And I was like, it went up against Under Falling Skies. And I'm like, Under Falling Skies has got hype. It's cool. I've played it. I reckon it's going to win. And everyone was like, nuh-uh.
Clans.
Nuh-uh. you're like way off the reservation with this one, Sarah. And I'm like, okay, maybe you're right. And yeah, and I've since played Clans, and now I know that I was totally wrong. It's an amazing game. It reminds me of, it's very much like Terra Mystica. And I know, Jules, you've played Gaia Project.
No, I still haven't.
Right?
No.
You haven't. So you haven't played Terra Mystica or Gaia or Clans. Oh, man. Okay. Wow.
Are they connected?
We have nothing to discuss.
Is Clans connected to those?
Clans, no, it's not connected. It's not like the same design or anything, but it does have a very similar feel. Yeah, you're kind of unlocking these things on your player board, and you're essentially building buildings on the player board, and there's different faction abilities, but it's clan abilities, right? You're a different Scottish clan. Okay. So it does have a lot of parallels. But,
do we need to discuss the game more, or...?
We don't because it's about to be blown out of the water because TMB wins.
Yeah,
but you know what, it was actually pretty close.
Yeah, it was,
because Yeah, it was really close. So Too Many Bones won 114-98. So I wanted to talk about Clans because it's going to be out. It's going to be out of the bracket, but it's still a game that I think is really cool. And I felt bad that in the first bracket, I was like, what is this game? This is nothing. I've never heard of it. So there you go. So still check it out. But Too Many Bones is through to the next round. And do you want me to tell you what it's going to go up against?
Oh, yeah.
Because
I'd love to
know that now.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's going to go up against Pandemic Legacy.
That's
going to be a tough battle. Probably. Pandemic Legacy is very, very loved. Much beloved. By all. All right. So let's move on to the next bracket, battle is Marvel Champions. And I know you're a huge fan, Mike, versus Eclipse Second Dawn.
Ah, Eclipse wins. Let's move on.
Which no one likes.
Okay, cool. And so those. All right, look, I have spoken about Eclipse so many times that, Jules, I'm going to let you say a few words about Eclipse because otherwise it's just boring if I talk about it again. But who wants to start? Do you want to talk about Marvel Champions first, Mike?
Or me
Jules,
first?
Jules
can go first. Okay, go for it, Jules.
Eclipse Second Dawn. It's, in my opinion, the best 4X game that exists. Yes, better than TI4. I feel it presents much more of a challenge in terms of the strategy. I feel like the coolest thing, who doesn't want to do this, right? To customize and load out your own ships with customized weapons and jet engines and all this cool equipment, and you can get cool alien technology and just make these absolute powerhouse dreadnought ships or these hard-hitting missile loaded little firefighters. It's just such an awesome game, so much replayability.
Everyone wants to do that.
Like building your own spaceship, come on, like that's pretty awesome. There's not many games where you get to do that. It's just an amazing game. So much so, I've bought my own copy now and I'm very keen to play it. It's just something special. I really, really enjoy it. It doesn't take long to play. Like, it's a 4X game that really doesn't take long, which is a rare thing as well. I just think it has so much to offer. Even though the combat is, you know, really simple, it provides really tense moments. And I just love the economy of trying to manage, you know, the different colonies you have out there, but then you need to pay for all the actions that you take. I think it's so, so clever, and it's a very highly respected game, and I expect it to do very well. So you can talk about your men in tight tights, Mike.
Tight tights. Hey, they roam around the forest looking for fights. Okay. Marvel Champs, it's a great game. I first got into it when we were sort of locked down a lot, and I heard that it did really well solo, and it does. It's a game that you can pull out a different enemy every time, and you can get a different combination of your heroes, and it's just a different puzzle because every hero works very differently to the next. And if you want to take it up to the next level, you can break down all your decks in this deck building game. It's a deck creation game, I think they call
it. Construction.
Where you can actually break down construction, that's the one, where you can break down all the decks and actually create the decks yourself if you're very intelligent, which I'm not that intelligent. I just use the pre-constructed decks. But it's got that awesome mechanic in the game where you have to spend cards to use cards. So you're constantly looking at this hand of cards in front of you, and you have that tough decision. Which cards am I going to spend to be able to use another card? Because you want to use all of them. You're trying to take down this bad guy. You want to knock him out, and you want to stop him threatening your area because he's, you know, putting danger all over you, all over these different cards that you have to clear up as well while you're trying to attack him. And then when you get low health, you need to sort of, you know, revert back to your alter ego self. And he's not going to attack you during that time, but while you're not around as your hero self, he's going to, you know, ramp up his causing terror in the town and bringing destruction to everyone and, you know, completing his master evil plan. So it's got that really cool balance that you have to sort of keep the whole game. Just really interesting decisions, and you always feel like you're moments away from death, which is really exciting. It plays great. Look, I recommend it for 2 to 3 people. 4 gets a bit much, but it's a great solo game. So if I'm comparing it to Eclipse Second Door, which I have not played, I have a funny feeling it probably doesn't play great solo. And that's definitely somewhere where Marvel Champs will definitely shine. And you can keep adding to it if you want. You don't have to. I've sort of probably hit my comfortable zone right now that I've got enough Marvel Champs at the moment. You can get campaign modes. You can get different enemies to fight. Like, to be honest, most of the times that I play the game, I fight the Rhino with a different hero, and it's still fun. I don't even change the bad guy that often, and I still have a really great time. But, you know, with different enemies you can, you know, take on and different heroes, it's always a different combination that you're playing the same game, but it feels very different every time. It stays fresh, it stays exciting, and that's why Marvel Champs should win. It's a great game.
I just tried to look up if you can play solo Eclipse. I couldn't find it in time. I was like frantic. Can you do it? Can you do it? I don't know. In Board Game Geek, it says it's 2 onwards. Not there's no 1.
There you go.
So maybe not. So there you go. 2 great games. The bracket will go up on the usual places like Facebook, Facebook community, and also Instagram. And you can vote in our Discord, and you can vote in all 3 places if you really want. Like, if you're really invested, go for it. Who's going to stop you? Not us.
3 votes for Marvel Champs. Thank you. Great.
All right. And let's move on to our oaths.
Hi, everyone. Connor here. Just want to take a sec to talk about one of our sponsors, 2D6 Games up in Brisbane. 2D6 support this podcast, and Dan, Dave, and Joe are a great community-focused team who are always present at our game days. They offer free shipping Australia-wide, which is an incredible bonus. They also directly support the Brisbane Game Day, so if you're ever at a Brisbane Game Day, drop into their store and say hello.
Before we start with our oaths, I just want to do a little bit of a plug for our community, because our Patreons are amazing. They help us in so many ways to make this podcast what it is, and we're not just a podcast now. Like, we are a community. We're running events, and we couldn't do all of that without you guys, without our Patreons, without the community. There are so many ways that you guys help us out. You know, it's not just becoming a Patreon, but people help us to volunteer. They give us like questions they want us to talk about on the show. They give us suggestions and feedback. They, you know, talk about what games they love and what designers they'd like to have on the show. Just everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we just want to thank you. Thank you very much for helping us and helping the show become what it is. All right.
Thanks, guys.
Now, let's go into the oaths. All right. Who wants to go? Who wants to be the sacrificial
lamb? I'll do it.
All right. Go on. I'm pushing you ahead.
Not making excuse.
front of the lion, yeah. The giant lion with
I'm
all
gonna
the.
I'm going to get disemboweled again.
You know what? Yeah.
Not making excuses, but I've had a crazy work schedule. I've worked a lot of weekends this past month, in fact, all of them. So I haven't.
Oh, that's
no,
not very nice.
It's not. And so it means I haven't had time to paint the Nemesis heroes. I've just got those to go. And I really want to paint them because I'm going to play a game once it's fully painted. And I've done all the aliens now. So I still haven't done that. I'm hoping finally I'll get a weekend, a proper weekend this weekend. So I'm going to try and get it done then. So very excited to get those painted.
Nice. Bit of an Easter painting
Session.
Yeah,
bit of Easter painting, bit of relaxing time.
Mm-hmm. I love it. It's like it's actually a traditional Easter thing, right? Yeah. You paint the eggs usually, but you're sitting there painting your minis.
Paint people that are going to get chewed up by monsters.
You're going to paint little flowers on their shoulder pads and stuff.
So
bunny rabbits.
Of course, we don't do things in halves. We double down here. And what I'm going to do is get a game that's an absolute favorite of mine to the table that has been a while because I've lacked the time, but I haven't finished all the content for it yet, and that is Cloudspire. So A little while ago, I finished the Grige expansion, which was amazing. I love that faction. They are so cool. They're like bugs that get to tunnel underground and transform and become more powerful. They're so cool. But I want to get into the Horizons Wrath expansion. So I, Jules Watson, swear by the next time I'm on the podcast, I will have played some of the Horizons Wrath expansion for Cloudspire.
What's in the expansion?
Oh, I do. So the Horizons Wrath faction, they don't have a base like the normal factions. Their base is a flying ship. So their base looks the same shape as the other ones, and it starts in one location, but they have the power to like pull this plank that is the plank is like actually on their ship, their base. And if they unlock that power, they have this disc which acts as the plank, and they can pull it away and all the minions on that spot die. And when they do that, they can actually fly their base to a different part of the island and redeploy somewhere else. And not only that,
that's cool.
The base has giant cannons on it. So there's four hexes of the base leading outwards that can fire these cannonballs, which you have to spend source to buy. And you fire these giant cannonballs across the whole island. It collides with the first thing that it hits along its line. And if you line up with the enemy gate, you can fire cannonballs from your ship straight into the enemy gate and do damage that way. It is really, really cool. And they're all... Wow. Yeah, it's so cool.
That just sounds way OP. Like knowing that Cloudspire is a tower defense game and your tower is flying around. How does that even work? Like how do you go and attack you? How would people come and attack you if you're floating around?
The base, once you've pulled the plank, you can only do it once, but you have to unlock the power first. Mm. So you can't do it from the get-go, and you can only deploy one island hex, like one hex map piece away. You can't like go crazy on the other side or something like that. So you have some limitations how far you can go, but the fact that you can redeploy is just so clever. Like you might, I think it's really clever because your enemy might set up towers in a way, because the pathways are leading from each base to another, and you suddenly change that up, you might not go near their towers because you've got a new shortest path to their base. I think it's really clever. So I'm excited to see how that works.
I can't wait to hear how it actually works, because like you say, you can spend so much source and so much... You don't get a lot of source. You could spend that building towers, and then these guys are just like, no, I'm out. I'm going over this way.
So with the cannonballs, you roll the tower dice, so you can miss with them. And I think they cost 2 source per cannonball. Mm. So it's a little bit costly. But if you roll, if you don't roll a miss, then you do 1 or 2 damage with it. So, a little bit. But I'm really excited to try that. And there's another whole expansion that I haven't got to yet, which is the Uprising. So I've got lots of content still to go for that. I've still got 2 whole expansions. So I'm excited for that.
It sounds really cool. I can't wait to hear about that one, because it really does sound... Because the thing that is so cool about Cloudspire is that you have to march to the other person's tower. You have to march that way. So it could really change things up when you have to like change direction of your dude. Like it sounds like utter chaos to me. Like in a game where you can predict a lot, usually, this sounds like you could really throw someone completely off. Yeah. Which is really interesting.
Yeah. I'm excited for it. I haven't played it in so long. I'm keen to get it out again.
What about you, Mike?
My oath was to play some of Welcome to the Moon, the latest Welcome to version, and I am absolutely enthralled with it. I am enjoying it so much. Renato and I have been playing the campaign mode in it, which you don't have to do, but
you can. It has a campaign mode?
It has a camp. There's 8 different maps you can do, and each different map changes the mechanics quite a bit as well. So it's a different challenge altogether.
Let me guess, there's a dark side of the moon, isn't there?
I don't know, but there are references like they reference, like, I think in the game your name is Captain Takai, like George Takai. I saw a Dalek from Doctor Who in the first map. Like, they got lots of little references to your sci-fi sort of fans throughout the game. So I'm excited to see what else there is. But it's I've never played the original Welcome To. Renato and I really do enjoy Welcome to New Las Vegas. That feels like it's a very like Euro kind of flippin' right. And this one sort of bounces around in difficulty. It's sort of on the same level as Welcome to New Las Vegas, but you can see similarities and a lot of differences, but each map provides a whole different challenge. Like we just did map 3, which had this really cool challenge of, it was an actual grid of numbers. So your numbers from left to right and bottom to top had to be in ascending order. So you start finding these weird little spots where, oh, I put a 4 here and a 4 here. That means in this exact spot, I have to put a number that's higher than 4 and lower than 4. So I can't do that now. Mm. Like, you put yourself into all these really awkward positions. But it's been really exciting. And we're definitely going to continue with it. Like, even Renata's asking, oh, do you want to play Welcome To tonight? Like, because she's been really enjoying it. So Welcome To The Moon, it's been a big hit. And I'm going to keep going with it. Like, we're hopefully going to finish up. And you don't have to play campaign mode. Every mission just has its own rules in the rule book. You don't have to follow the campaign. There's a whole bunch of campaign cards that I haven't touched yet. So I'm very excited to see what they are and when they get introduced. But no, that's been a big hit, and so much content for a game that's not that expensive in a small box. It's a heap of content. So for our Flip and Write fans out there, get on to Welcome to the Moon, because it's just been a really cool bunch of little puzzles that have been really fun to do. So that's a tick. My next oath, I am absolutely dying to dig into my new received game, Townsfolk Tussle.
Oh, it came. Very cool.
Yeah, so it's it looks amazing. The minis look amazing. The artwork in the game is just awesome. And it, going through the rules, it looks surprisingly straightforward for the most part. Have a battle, go to town, buy some new things, have an event. Have a battle.
Have an event. I love it. Have an event. Sit down. Have an event.
Have an event. Everyone gets an event card. Some are secret that, you know, are going to make, like, it's not exactly take that, but an event card might make you, like, force you to do something mean to somebody else sometime. Like, I saw a card that, you know, take this event and don't show anyone and keep it face down. And next time you take damage, you switch places with another player and they take damage instead. You know, like, you don't want to do it, but you have to do it, which I think is quite interesting. But now Townsfolk Tussle, it's got that like Steamboat Mickey, sort of artwork, that really
Steamboat
old
Willy.
Cuphead.
Mickey was in it though, Cuphead. I think.
Yeah, that's one. Yeah, I know what you mean. About that thing. But yeah, it just looks so interesting. So I'm dying to play that. It goes for approximately 3 to 4 hours from what I understand. So it's a bit of a long slog. Time hog. Yeah, it's a bit of a long one from what I understand. I think it's just once you get into the game, I think you have to jump around a lot because, especially at the start, from what I understand, you're not very strong. You haven't had a chance to buy many weapons. But every different boss you have to battle has a different terrain around them, and you interact with that terrain. So one might protect you from the boss, or one might, you know, give you more strength, or I don't know, I haven't gone through it all yet. But I think you really have to work the map and move around a lot and sort of give them a smack when you can and run away and try to get them from different angles. So, yeah, I'm Michael Fruger. Swear to play Townsfolk Tussle by the time on the next podcast. And I get extra points if I finish the campaign for Welcome to the Moon.
For sure. You get those extra points that we're definitely going to
extra points
put in the oath point
tally
that we definitely have. Send it to me in the mail.
Yeah. I'm keen to see here what you think of Townsfolk Tussle, because it's a lot of people are excited for it, and it's been widely described as Kingdom Death Monster Light. So, yeah, keen to see what you
exactly.
think.
Exactly. Very much. And how about you, Sarah?
Well, that seems to be everybody. No. No. Well, you all know how I went with mind management because I've already explained. So that one, Big Tick, played it several times and it was awesome. And I'm going to continue to play it for free for extra points, Mike. I'm going to get some extra points. Oh, yeah.
We'll get him into the mountains.
Look at me. The other oath I had was Jaws of the Lion and quote unquote to force my, you know, preteen son to play with me. And I'm sure that every parent of a preteen out there was shaking their head at that point going, "I'm not going to do that. That's not a thing. She can't like force him to, she's going to be playing Roblox and that's it." And yeah, that's basically what happened.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it hasn't happened yet, but I'm going to keep that on the back burner because I'm not going to pressure him too much, but he's coming around. I think he will play it with me. He's been playing some stuff with me lately. Like I spoke about how he's been playing Ghost Blitz and Illusion, like those lighter card games, but also he's been playing with me lately Railroading.
Oh yeah.
Because I bought and I bought the last Kickstarter and I had like the yellow version and the green version. Now I have all the little packs with all the different expansions. And I think I spoke about it ages ago when I got that. And I tried a couple of the expansions, but I haven't tried them all. So I'm gonna try and see if he'll play a little bit more of that with me and see if we can explore some of those little extra dice. And I think that that's a pretty safe bet because even if I can't get him to play with me, I'll just play it solo. So it's not, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think solo oaths for me is probably a good idea.
I feel you there.
For the time being. Yeah. Just with uni being so crazy, it's probably a good idea because lining things up with people and my schedule at the moment is mental. I'm moving next week. Yeah. It's just, oh man, it's just one thing after the other. Just, my plate is very full at the moment. So I, Sarah Green, swear to play some more Railroad Inc. expansions, at least one, but I'll try to get a couple so I can compare them by the next time I'm on the pod.
Very good.
I didn't do too badly. At least I did one. I think Jaws of the Lion is going to be on the back burner for quite a while.
You and everyone else in that has ever attended a Gloomhaven game.
Who's finished it? Who's finished? That's right. It's so true. Well, thank you both so much for joining
me. That was good.
On the podcast. It was good fun, as always.
Thanks, guys.
And once again, thank you to everyone for joining us and listening along.
Bye.